Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be a time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Help me welcome Nancy C., a compulsive overeater from Michigan. Welcome, Nancy.
Muted. Let me try that again. Hey, everybody. Thank you, Donna, for leading tonight and everyone doing service. And Jessica, thank you for asking me to participate in this meeting tonight. My name is Nancy C., and I am a compulsive overeater recovering a day at a time in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And boy, am I glad to be here. I don't think I've ever been to a meeting with so many newcomers. And I'd like to say to each of you, thank you for raising your hand and saying you're new, and welcome, welcome home. I don't think anybody gets onto a Zoom meeting or finds themselves in a Overeaters Anonymous meeting because they're bored and have nothing to do. So they go, well, I think I'll check out an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. You know, I know when I walked into the rooms of OA, I was hopeless. I was desperate. I had nowhere else to go. It being a new year, I had tried every diet. I had tried every treatment, acupuncture, hypnosis, you name it, I've done it. And it always worked until it didn't. And once it didn't, I could never get it back again. And that's the difference between 12-step program and this program of recovery than to diets, because it really deals, for me, this 12-step program really deals with the mental twist I have, this hole in my soul of not knowing what to do with my feelings because I've got this allergy. I'm allergic to certain foods. And the first 9 years that I was in OA, I never heard that I had an allergy to certain foods. I thought I had weak willpower. I thought I just wasn't like other people and couldn't do it. And if I could only do it for longer, once I got to a perfect weight, it would be all fine. You know, as soon as I got thin, my life would be perfect. I did that many times. It never did work. So what is my story? My story is like everyone else sitting in here. My childhood was really pretty normal, except for I always felt left out of things. I always felt like I raised my hand and people didn't see me, so I had to raise it higher and people still didn't see me. So I started to try and overachieve. And when I couldn't get the accolades that I thought I deserved, I had no place else to go because I didn't really have any friends. So the only solace I found was to eat. And I don't know about you, but when I could find myself that cookie cabinet and take a couple of Oreos and shove them in my mouth, I had this moment of, the world is okay. And that lasted for a while. It made me feel good. So what would I do the next time that I got restless or irritable or discontent, just not happy with what was going on? I ate, and it just kind of numbed me, is what food did to me. It just kind of numbed me out, because that addiction, just like with alcohol, it dulls the senses. So it makes me not have to think of things. So I'm not taking care of anything, right? All I'm doing is dulling what I'm doing and then compounding that the next day when I have to still deal with what I had, plus the mess of whatever I had to clean up after that. Really overachiever all my life. I played sports. I was good at it. I was on student government. How many of you guys remember, well, you're in Canada, but you remember the gas shortage? Well, for those of you who might remember, you could go get gas on even in odd days. And in high school, I was a goody two shoes, and the teachers would line up their cars, and I didn't have class the first two periods, and I would sit in a car, cars, different cars, and just go stand in gas lines and fill up teachers' cars and eat. Well, and also did some drinking and some drugs at the same time, but my primary drug is sugar. Made it through high school, really very athletic, so I kept the weight off. When I got to college, I decided that I wanted to be in student government because you were out among people, always hiding that fear that if anybody knew that I had no clue what I was doing, or if they understood how afraid I was that I was gonna, people were gonna find out. I don't even know what people were gonna find out, but I was so afraid that people were gonna figure me out that I had to keep pushing farther and farther into being seen and being the front of attention. Because if I wasn't the front of attention, people would just walk all over me. Self-importance just drove me. Self-centeredness, self-seeking, is the root of all my problems. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Fast forward, I did the same thing through my career. I was very successful in a career, traveled all around the world, had high expense accounts, met with very high-level officials in different countries. Very successful, but also very neurotic and afraid that I was going to mess up. With an expense account, you would think, okay, you can be able to do a lot of things, right? I would hide in my room at night and eat. I would find an excuse, so I have to work on a presentation or I have to do something, let other people go out so I could order room service and eat whatever I wanted, just so I didn't have to deal with people and I didn't have to deal with all that stress. I got let go of that job. It took me 2 years in recovery to be able to say that I got fired, because I'd like to say that, oh, I took an early retirement or whatever. But I started to manage by candy jars. I started to walk around my company and dictate to other people what they would do. I knew where every candy jar was in my company to go get some food and talk to some people and stop doing my work and blaming everyone else for my units not performing. So I was exited a company that I had worked for 30 years. They gave me a good severance package, thank God. And I was out on my butt, and I didn't know what to do because my whole career was defined by that job. My career wasn't defined by my social life, by my family. I had a partner. I didn't have anybody else that I really let get to know me, because if they got to know me, they wouldn't like me anyhow. So I would push people away and just was a lone wolf. I liked using people, man. If you had something I needed, I was right on top of it. You'd be my best bud until I didn't need you anymore. And then it was like I never knew who you were. Just crawled right over you and kept going. And that was the way that I got ahead in life. I was seeing a therapist at the time that I got let go, and she suggested that I go to Overeaters Anonymous. Now, I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous since 1986, so I have almost 40 years of recovery from alcohol. So I knew the 12 steps, but I really didn't know. Once I put down the alcohol, my life got better instantaneously. Stopped getting arrested. I stopped sideswiping my car. I stopped having blackouts. And so people got off my back. But I never worked a 12-step program because I didn't have to, because things got better enough for me to think that I could contain and live my life and continue to go on pretty happily for a while. So when she said that maybe I had a problem with food, I was overweight. I was 65 pounds overweight. And I was like, there a program for overeating, a 12-step program? But I was so desperate, I said, I'll do anything. So I went to a meeting and not as lucky. I mean, you guys can be lucky or unlucky today. I walked into a meeting and no one was there. And I was like, yes. And I was just getting up ready to leave and somebody walked in and I was like, okay. So she kind of talked to me and explained where meetings were and that meetings really helped getting you out of yourself. find people, try to put the food down, or do put the food down and start finding people to talk about the hopelessness of our condition, that it is the allergy that keeps us in a fog, and that once we put down the food, we have to deal with everything that we were masking with food. So how do we do that? We do that through the 12 steps of recovery, and you need to do that pretty quickly and find somebody who will take you through the steps. My local AA group was a very kind, gentle, loving group of diet with group support. We read the steps, but we had this: if you broke your abstinence, if you stopped doing what you were supposed to do with your food, keep trying, keep coming back. And so nobody really got recovered. Everyone kept getting a couple of weeks of abstinence and then would eat and be like, well, it's progress, not perfection. Well, really, you'll find out in the big book, it says spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. It doesn't have anything to eat to do with food. So this program really doesn't have anything to do with food, except for that's what got us here, because we couldn't put it down because we hurt so bad, we didn't know what else to do. So when I finally got sick and tired of being sick and tired, I, over 9 years, lost 65 pounds to prove to that company that I could live without them. And then when people stopped recognizing that, I started gaining the 65 pounds, all still in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, and finally decided I quit. I am not going to go anymore. And another therapist, I mean, how many thousands of dollars have I spent on therapy when I can get it all free at 7:30 on a Sunday night? Gave me a number to call into, and it was an OA Big Book recovery meeting. And I called that meeting, and it was the first time that I heard that I had an allergy of the body and I had an obsession of the mind. And then I had this double whammy that if I put the food I was allergic to down, my mind was going to tell me I had to have that food. And that if I didn't do something with the mind, I was going to turn around and just eat again. And it's almost like a vicious cycle, and it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. Put the food down, don't do anything. You have to pick up the food. Pick up the food. Now you're back into the allergy. So you have to put that down. So what do you need to do? What did I need to do? I needed to find somebody who could take me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous from using food instead of alcohol in that book and work those steps exactly as prescribed in the book. So what did that look like for me? First, I had to be desperate. I was so desperate. I remember calling into that line and hearing people be happy, joyous, and free and excited about living. And I was like, how can you? I am like so miserable. I go to sleep with a stomach ache. I pray not to pick up food the next day. And the next day by 7 o'clock, I'm in line at Starbucks getting two cookies, and I'm screwed up the day, so I might as well just keep eating and try again tomorrow. I couldn't get out of that, and people did. I heard the evidence that this program worked. So I found somebody who took me through the big book, and I encourage all of you, if you're new here tonight, put your name in the chat, look for people who are available to help you get started or take you through the big book. But I learned that I had to put that food down. And I had to admit that I alone couldn't manage my food or my life. Saying my life was unmanageable, are you kidding me? All right, so I have problems with Oreo cookies or chocolate chip cookies, but thank you very much. I had a very successful life. Yes, I got fired, but I'm not telling anyone that. My life is just great. Just leave me alone and I'll be fine. I learned I really couldn't do anything on my own, that I truly was powerless. And people kept talking about this power that they needed to plug into. And I was like, I'm not really getting this. I was raised Catholic, but it was kind of foreign to me of what God would care about what I ate. That just didn't, he's for the big things, the big ticket items, that then I never understood why that world's still screwed up if he's taking care of the big ticket items. Really, what was this God thing? But I stayed around long enough to have somebody say, just agree it's not you. and then be willing to try what other people have tried and really take a look at your life. So it's almost like I can't, God can. Why don't we let God and give him a chance? And my sponsor told me, she said, all you have to do is put the food down and work this program. And once you find that contentment, have that spiritual change, have a different look on life, then you can decide if you want to go back to eating. And you make your decision then. And I'll tell you, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I would not entertain today going back to any of those foods because my life is just so amazingly fantastic compared to where it was almost 4 years ago. So I put down the food, I started working the program and started going to meetings. Now I got reco big book recovered in the Hollywood squares here, couldn't go to meetings locally, so I did have the opportunity to meet people all around the world, and it was amazing. Didn't I mean that's how I met most of you guys. I mean, I feel like I know half of you from another meeting. And people understood what I was talking about. I don't know about the new people in the room, but I would sit there and go, yeah, but if you only knew what I did, if you only knew that I pulled the pizza out of the trash can last night and it had dust bunnies on top of it, and I, just like kind of took them off and still ate them, or decided that I was going to eat some moldy stuff in the refrigerator and just take the stuff out, you'd be like, oh, you're weird. Why well, I haven't found anybody who hasn't done what I've done. And there's been people that have done a lot of other things. Sometimes I go, ooh, never tried that, but I don't need to go try that today. I do know that in these rooms, people understand how I ate, how I felt when I ate, and how I felt when I didn't eat, and how I felt when I didn't eat. This is very bad English, didn't eat, and picked up the tools of recovery instead. So when I made the decision to work, actively work the steps of taking a look at where I might be at fault for things, because everyone did wrong to me. I played the victim and martyr my whole life. If only people did what I wanted them to do, my world would be fine. If only people behaved the way I thought they should, life would be great. Nobody ever did that, right? And nobody ever would. That is just delusional thinking that I can control the world. So I started to look at how my big resentments, people that really piss me off or burn me up or I thought really harm me. And once I really followed the prescriptions in the big book and looked at, yeah, they did do something to me, but really it was my basic instincts that we all have that are very important to each of us. The need to be in society, be one among friends, to procreate, to be safe, to have security. If any of those things were threatened for me, I retaliated because I needed to protect that, but I didn't know how to do that in a grown-up way because I never grew up. I always ate my feelings down, so I never matured like other people. So I found out where I was selfish and where I was dishonest and where I was self-serving, and really came to see that most of the time I was the one who participated or got the ball rolling in a lot of these things because of trying to arrange everyone's life for them. And they retaliated, they got annoyed, and they pushed back. So I learned how to make amends. I learned my own character defects and where I'm at fault. I went and I corrected all the harms that I knew that I had, and I've just gone through a whole nother series of them recently. It's amazing how God brings in front of you things that He wants you to see when He wants you to see it. But I did truly, after going through those steps, have a spiritual awakening where I did see the promises in the big book where I do live today happy, joyous, and free, that I don't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. I comprehend the word serenity and I know peace. And I know that sitting here today, I know that this program works. I can't sit here and absorb it. I need to transmit it. Somebody said that this morning, that this is a program that you need to transmit to be able to keep. And if there's one thing I can do today is to touch somebody with something I've said in my story or my thoughts, to help you want to pick up the phone, call somebody, take a hand, let them help you through the program just enough to get you through so you find your own happiness, joy, and free. You know, it talks on in a section in the big book about what we call the bedevilments. And if you really ask, if I were really to ask myself some of these questions, and I'm going to ask newcomers and returning people and people who are sitting in the rooms, you know, thinking that they do just fine, you know, do we have trouble with our personal relationships, or are we always at odds with other people? We couldn't control our emotional natures. You know, I used to be like a dry piece of Kindle. If somebody looked at me funny, I took it very personally and I would blow up. If I had one thing that, you know, kind of annoyed me in the morning, by nighttime, I was a whirling dervish. I mean, just don't even come near me because I was just so angry at the world. Were we prey to misery and depression? Oh, if you only had my life, you would understand how awful it is. Now I look at my life and go, God, if you had my life, you'd be so grateful to have my life. And my life hasn't changed. Nothing has changed, but how I look at it has completely changed. That I really do look at the glass half full or my cup overflowing, as a matter of fact, rather than those little things that annoy me. Yeah, I have those things. Everyone has those little things that really, sometimes they're really big. Sometimes we have big crises and things like that. But there's always another moment in the day where life is good and God is taking care of me right as I am right now. Could I make a living? Yeah, I could make a living. I could bring home a dollar. But did I have friends? Did I have a little society? Did I have this fellowship I have today, which is really what I crave? I have friends today that know me better from these little squares than people that I grew up with. If I had a problem, I could call any one of you guys and you would know instantaneously what I was talking about and be willing to help me in any way you could to get me where I needed to go or to help me with the way that I was thinking. I never had that before. I was a lone wolf and a real loner. I was full of fear. I felt useless. And I was unhappy. And help other people. Nobody helps me. Why would I even consider helping anybody? And I know today my whole program of recovery is based on helping other people and getting out of myself rather than living wallowing in that self-pity. So if I look at those bedevilments and then look at the promises on page 80, 82, I think it is, they're the opposite. They are 84. It says, we're going to know, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We'll not regret the past nor wish the short to shut the door on it. We comprehend a new, comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we can see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Our whole interest in selfish things, and we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away, and our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us, and we'll intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And we suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. I have a God today that I choose to call God, but I have a power greater than myself. That is everything. There's a line in the big book that says we were left to say, is God everything or is he nothing? I can't say, God, help me with my food and the rest, my pocketbook, my finances, my relationships. I've got those under control. I have to every morning say, you tell me what to do. You be in charge, not me. Somebody explained the power thing as if now that we're just done with Christmas, you know, I walked around with what do you call that thing? Plug. A plug of Christmas lights that somebody finally got me to put into the socket. And it was this little short, you know, 25 strand thing of lights. And then somebody gave me another pair of lights to string into it, and my room got a little brighter. And then somebody gave me a 50 watt or a 50 light thing. And all of a sudden, pretty soon, the more that I plug into God, the more I plug into this program, the brighter the day gets. And is it always bright? No. This is also a dimmer switch. If I don't do what I'm supposed to do every day, if I don't wake up and ask for help and get into the fellowship and really work the program and work with sponsees and other people, the dimmer switch starts pulling out some of those strands of lights and it gets dimmer. So it's what I've been told in this program of recovery is that once I get through the steps, I have to keep working the steps. And I do that by staying in steps 10, 11, and 12. And step 10 simply is taking a look at my day and doing an inventory, you know, taking a balance sheet. What did I do good? What
Five
did I not
minutes.
do? Thank you. What did I not do good? Where can I improve? Do I need to make amends? Did I harm anyone? Do I need to make restitution? And stay in fit spiritual condition, because it was almost like I had a clogged toilet before I got into program, before I worked these steps, where you know, I needed to get Roto-Rooter in there because nothing was going to go down that drain. And once I went through and found out where I needed to change and where, with the help of God, He did change me, all of a sudden I had clear pipes, right? But if I don't continue to work that, it starts getting clogged again, right? The toilet paper gets a little cloggy, and then it can get more and more cloggy. So I have to keep flushing that toilet and keeping it clean. I have to every day plug into that power greater than myself to ask for direction and ask what He wants me to do today. My times are His times, and that's what I have to do. Here's my agenda, God. What do you have for me? And can you help me through this agenda, which I think I can't do? And then the 12th step of giving this message to other people. This is a fellowship of we. It's not a fellowship of I. I need to be in the program. I need to talk the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous every day if I want to stay recovered. I can identify out at any time. All I need to do is stop going to meetings, stop making phone calls, and I can be out the door quicker than anything. Anybody I've heard who's gone out has not actively done 10, 11, and 12. And it starts with a, God, my life is so busy. I just, you know, I'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes and I'll do it the next day. I did that with diets for years and years and years, and look at where it got me. It got me to age 60, what, 65, and I was so miserable. I mean, it took me this long to find real recovery in life, but I'll tell you what, the last 3 years, last 4 years have been absolutely amazing. Tomorrow morning, 3 o'clock, I get on a flight to go down to Houston to go to the national championship game. Came back from the Rose Bowl last week. I never would have done stuff like that when I was eating, because I'd be too busy eating to be able to do all of that stuff. And I'd be too miserable and want to stay home and just stuff my face. That's living happy, joyous, and free. That's the promise of the program. And all I needed to do was put the food down, take somebody's hands, and work this step and be honest, open, and willing to look at myself. We're no different than anybody else. We all have the same character defects. We've all done the same things. We're all just human beings trying to do good. God is within us and between us in every one of us. You're here tonight because you need to stay recovered. You need to get recovered. God has put you in a place to be able to be successful in this program of recovery. So don't look a gift horse in the mouth. This is a gift. Every day that we're here is a gift, and every day in recovery is, oh my God, I can't tell you how grateful I am to be a recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous today. And God willing, tomorrow morning I wake up abstinence, I jump on a plane, Michigan wins the national championship, and I've continued to work my program a day at a time. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for sharing your experience.